This is Rick Brantley, Lo-Fi, Episode 2, Waterloo.
One, two.
On today's podcast, I'm joined by my partner in crime, my producer on this project, the great Mark Selby.
Ooh, yeah.
The great Mark Selby.
Can everyone call me that now?
And today we're going to be talking about fatal flaws and the things that do you in.
Comeuppances.
Yeah. As it pertains to love, and more specifically as it pertains to our song, Waterloo.
All right, let's talk a little.
All right.
It's easier said than done. As I remember, Rick, you and Tia Sillars and I got together that day, and as always, we toss around things we might want to write about, and you brought up Waterloo.
Yeah, I think I had been reading something about Napoleon the night before, and I just thought it was such a beautiful, tragically beautiful title. And I just love the idea behind what is that thing that is our greatest error? What leads us to that? How do we get there? And right. Is there any way to avoid it?
And it's a great sounding word, yeah. Which is so important in a song. So it immediately attracted all of us, yeah, to want to write something where we could use this. And I think that got us talking about how in love, you know, you can have people that are amazingly attracted to each other and, in fact, really seriously, madly in love with each other. But, man, they just have a certain, like the tectonic plates always rub in a way that it is just maybe not going to work for, yep, the long haul. Even though both of them may even want it to,
yep,
it's like it's almost more pain than love, ultimately, and maybe the pain wins.
Yeah. And that's it goes back to what we've talked about at length many times of what is that thing? Is it bad luck? Is it bad timing? Is it hubris? Is it,
yeah,
what's the thing when
is it trying too hard?
Maybe
is it
you
not
try
trying
too hard.
Enough, you know, is,
yeah,
it can be either one. Like what's our first line?
It's Black Irish, Southern Baptist, Roman candle and a book of matches, red Tabasco, wild honey. If it was anyone else, I'd think it was funny. And from that we went to, you know, different sort of historical events or just things that had happened that we thought were good examples of great mistakes.
Right.
And we're all kind of history nerds, so
yep,
that was a lot of great fun just sitting around and
people
talking about stuff like that.
People would be shocked at the hours we spend batting these things around and how much fun we actually,
yeah,
have, like, trying on these different scenarios. And you know what we did in the verse is we painted the specific of these two people.
Yeah.
And then we wanted to build to Waterloo in the chorus. So one of the things we thought might work was other things like Waterloo was for Napoleon,
right,
in history. So some
we had
ones,
a few of them.
Some of the ones we came up with were very politically incorrect,
yeah,
for one thing. It just those had to be dusted off and looked at and then quickly thrown into the,
yeah,
trash.
And never spoken of again.
Exactly. So you won't hear them here.
But we came up with a few.
Yeah.
'Cause Hemingway had 90 proof. Custer had 1,000 Sioux. Red Sox traded off Babe Ruth. Napoleon had Waterloo. You got me, baby, I got you. So one of the great blunders we came up with, because Mark and I are both big baseball fans, and I think people will get this, but December 26, 1919, the Boston Red Sox sold a 24-year-old left-hander named George Herman Ruth to the New York Yankees, who became the great Babe Ruth for what was quite a large sum of money at the time, for $25,000. Mm-hmm. You might have heard of that, the Curse of the Bambino.
Curse of the Bambino on the Red Sox, yeah.
And it took the Red Sox many, many, many decades to get back to relevance. That was one of those, that's one of those things, not unlike love, where I'm sure that whoever was making that deal
thought it was the right thing, a great deal at the time.
And at the time, you know, Babe Ruth was a pitching prospect. He was a young left-handed, threw really hard, and nobody knew he was going to become the Sultan of SWAT. Which leads us to
Ernest Hemingway.
Yep. The interesting thing about Hemingway, one of my favorite writers, is the life he led.
What a life. Clearly a man who needed a lot of adventure and stimulation in life. So, you know, he was always out big game hunting and deep sea fishing, and I think his heavy drinking was just part of that.
Yeah. Married four times.
So he clearly believed in love as well as marriage.
Yeah. Charlie Kaufman, you know, the great quote from Charlie Kaufman that you are what you love and not what loves you back.
Yeah.
Sometimes we love the wrong things and they don't love us back.
Charlie Kaufman, the great screenwriter.
Yeah. And that was, I think, probably the case in Hemingway's case, where he loved to write, he loved all those things, but he also loved a good 90 proof, you know. And he obviously poured all of that into his writing. If you, you know, the way he talks about it, The Sun Also Rises, about the bullfights and living in Spain, being an expat in those days, he's just a fascinating character. And the, what we were able to do in this song, I think, was really make that correlation between what he loved and kind of what he was dependent on. You know, love, good love, bad love, is something you depend on and you need it. And that's not always a good thing.
Yeah. And dependencies of all kinds, like he clearly had, can be fatal flaws.
Yeah. We're damned if we do, lonely if we don't. I always say I'm gonna give you up, but you know I won't. Hemingway had 90 proof, Custer had 1,000 Sioux, Red Sox traded off Babe Ruth, Napoleon at Waterloo. You got me, baby, I got. So this leads us to our last two, both great military blunders and two of the most recognizable military mistakes in the history of the world. The first being the Battle of Little Bighorn, commonly known as Custer's Last Stand. Custer is a fascinating guy too. Most people know the story, but it was this famous battle during the Native American Wars after the Civil War on the Western Front. As we were expanding, people were expanding into the West. This was his final battle, for a lot of reasons, but mainly because he did not respect his opponent.
Right.
And he had an ego the size of Texas.
He did. And it was one of the rare times when Native American tribes banded together.
Yeah.
We had the Lakota Sioux, the Cheyenne, and I believe the Arapaho had all banded together. It was unusual for them to all pull together like this. And so it was really a massive force.
Right.
I don't think Custer anticipated he was walking into such an opponent,
you know? Right. Well, either that or he did and he didn't care. I think that might be the other side of it. There are reports that his scouts told him there were as many as 1,500 to 2,500 Native Americans in one place, which was unheard of. And his force was about 600 to 700, and he went in anyway.
And his famous hubris this time didn't pull him through.
No, and speaking as a guy with a pretty large ego, speaking to a guy with a pretty large ego, oh, sure. I know how that can get you in trouble.
Surely we can't be those guys, Rick. Come on.
I'm pretty sure we are those guys.
We do make music after all.
Yeah.
So, That's Sylvester.
That's Sylvester.
Hey, Sly.
Hey,
but,
buddy.
Speaking of Custer, a great book about him and the Battle of the Little Bighorn is Son of the Morning Star.
Yeah.
Brilliant book. And if somebody wanted to read more from the Native American side of all this, there's a legendary book called Black Elk Speaks.
Ooh.
Really wonderful book with a lot of Native American mysticism in it as well.
I haven't read those. You haven't given them to me. What the hell?
They're over on the shelf, Rick. Raid the shelf, man, again.
I'm a notorious book borrower. Now we'll talk about the title of our song, Waterloo. The title of the song, something I'm sure everyone out there has heard about, the Battle of Waterloo, the end of Napoleon's reign as one of the great world leaders, military leaders in the history of the world. Napoleon's a really fascinating guy to me for a lot of reasons.
Totally.
And he's just something I've always been drawn to, and I just love, again, you can't really go wrong with the poetic nature of something like the Battle of Waterloo.
No, for sure.
And it was the end for him, which was kind of the coda for our little idea here. Was it's sooner or later there's an end,
and there will be an end to this song, and presumably to our talking about it here,
yeah.
Rick. I want to add one more thing about Napoleon, though. You know, Napoleon started off as this great man of the people, and the French really saw this as he was going to be someone who would exalt the individual in their French country. And then he, as he got more and more power, he made himself emperor, did the very thing he started off fighting against, which led to Beethoven. You know, Beethoven had dedicated, I don't remember if it was the Ninth Symphony, but one of his symphonies had been dedicated to Napoleon, and then when Napoleon made himself emperor, he tore up the front page that had the dedication on it.
This is why you have a guy like Mark Selby on your podcast, because he gives you great little tidbits like that. I've never heard that.
It's one of the few things that I brought with me from my music degree at Fort Hays University in Kansas. Thank you very much, Dr. B.
This has been Rick Brantley, Lo-Fi, Episode 2, with my guest Mark Selby, Waterloo.
Thank you, Rick. This was fun.
Yeah.